This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Australia's number one award-winning show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self.
Hide and seek.
Visit joy.org.au/hide and seek.
James Finlay and Andrew the Apprentice with you for Hide and Seek, your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. And tonight we'll be exploring all three at once.
Yes.
Pretty much. Hashtag mask for tonight.
Hashtag mask.
Russell Tovey has pissed off some queers.
Yes, he has.
With some comments in an article in The Guardian.
That's right.
Do you have the quote right there?
I do.
Can we take it? Let's take it right out of context, like everyone else has.
Oh, okay. So we're doing the out of context one first?
Yeah, sure. I'm so prepared here.
Yeah, no. See, I've read the whole...
I saw you highlighting.
Yeah, I know.
You've got it there somewhere.
I feel like I could have been really effeminate if I hadn't gone to the school I went to. I felt like I had to toughen up. If I'd been able to relax, prance around, sing in the street, I might be a different person now. But I thank my dad for that, not only allowing me to go down that path. Yeah. That's part of the quote.
Right.
That is part of the quote, and that's the part of the quote that's being quoted the most frequently.
Yes, so... Because the queers, the gays are upset. They're saying,
"Well, yes." There's two schools of thought. The school of thought that people are generally getting upset about is that
people are thinking that he's saying that it's not okay to be effeminate.
Yeah, that he's saying effeminate is a condition that needs to be overcome. Is what somebody else has written,
which is not what he said. Let's be honest.
No.
To discuss this, two men with beards also happen to be homosexuals. I hope that's true. Stephen and Daniel, welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Hello.
Now, shall we start at the beginning?
Yes.
You've both read the article.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And thoughts? Are we outraged?
Stephen?
I don't think he should be vilified for it. He's... made a very inarticulate statement that's probably been taken to the extreme.
Mm. Well, not only have people taken it out of context from the article, who knows what the context is that he actually said it in,
yep,
that the journalist framed it as.
Well, she's the only one that's got the tapes that has, of the whole interview, and the way that she wrote the article saying that he changed his demeanour before delivering that line is her interpretation of it. It's not something that can be verified by anyone else and may not in actual fact be true.
Daniel, what's your original thought, first thoughts of the quote?
Not having watched the show and not kind of knowing much about Russell other than my friends seem to think he's hot given the frequency he comes up in my feed.
it's pretty hot. I wouldn't kick him out of bed.
No. But look, the way I read it was, it would be disappointing if he was a role model of mine. I just think about all the people who could have been disappointed if they're, effeminate or they're not hot like him or all the things that he says that he's made himself in order to cope with a particular attack that he experienced when he was 18. But I was also thinking, I'm really surprised by the outrage because I don't think it's that surprising that a straight acting, masculine gay man. I've heard masculine straight acting gay men say things like this, as long as I've been out and about. So I don't know why people are suddenly surprised by this, and just because he's hot and he's out and he's in this series, whether we believe that he should be saying something else, my hat's off to him because the way they describe it in the interview is that he had an opportunity to either pull back or be honest and say what he wanted to say, and hats off to him for saying, I'm just going to say what I think and feel, because I think that we don't talk about this enough. And the fact that he's said this and people have been outraged, you know, whether or not people are offended or not, you know, it's a conversation that we need to have. And obviously he started that. But again, I'm less surprised and a bit disappointed, just because I know there'll be a whole bunch of people who'll be reading a lot more into what he's saying than perhaps they should.
Yeah.
Stephen, how do you define masculine?
Well, I guess it starts from being a very sort of straight acting is often the way, and the acting is probably a key word in that. So,
well, yeah, sorry to interrupt, but when we, because you, Daniel, said straight acting as well, the way that I've kind of interpreted straight acting is the fact that you are acting, but people aren't acting. Like, that's really who they are.
So when he, I agree. There are people who are naturally masculine, and I think we should get to that, because they're, you know, about whether there's a space for people who are masculine and comfortable in their own skin. But he talks about, if I'd been given the opportunity to relax and be myself, then I would be different to who I am. And now he's saying that he's something else. And so I think that he said it himself, that, you know, I'm not singing and prancing and skipping.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I was allowed to relax and be myself, I would.
Mm.
But my father taught me a different way, and now that's given me these qualities that everyone thinks I'm hot and I'm the it thing and I'm in all of these roles and etc. But do I think that there are genuine masculine people? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I absolutely do. Like I think there are genuine effeminate people out there in the world. But again, you know, I think that straight acting masculine in this case, I mean, by his own commentary, would be accurate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think whatever environment you grow up in is going to determine how you sort of turn out, and the sort of what is considered acceptable in that behavior in that environment is going to reinforce the certain behaviors. And in his case, that's more sort of butch, sort of rough and tumble. I think it was Essex where he grew up in, which is can be quite a sort of a hard environment and rough environment to live in. So if he did display sort of effeminate qualities, he would be targeted for those from his contemporaries.
It's funny you bring that up, because I was saying exactly the same thing to Andrew before the program, and that I have thought, in the past, that if I'd continued to grow up in Melbourne, because I grew up on the south coast of New South Wales, where no gays existed, if I previously thought, if I grew up in a high school in Melbourne and, you know, found out that I was gay when I was much younger, found out that, that, you know, I was into, well, actually, I've always been into Kylie, but like, if I had found that, or given, like, had more access to typically gay people, I guess, would I have come out differently? Not like come out differently, but would I have turned out differently?
I think that's exactly what Russell's saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. And I guess, you know, I may have, but the fact that I grew up in the south coast, on the south coast of New South Wales, where it wasn't okay to be gay, didn't really know what gay was, and then it wasn't until I moved to Melbourne where I found out that I was a flaming homosexual and that I loved cock the way that I did, that, mind you, at the end of the day, I still haven't changed for that person that I was at 18.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, in the context of my work in rural communities, one of the things I think is really interesting is how young people will say how they often don't feel that they can be themselves in those environments, and how they will respond to that. And I know that there are, you know, talking with young men in particular, they'll talk about how if they can pass as being straight, they'll get along and they'll get through.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if they don't, they're going to get a whole lot of the crap. And like, rather than this just focusing on what Russell's got to say, I think it's interesting that his response to being attacked for, you know, we're assuming because he looked effeminate on that particular night.
Yeah, he was
attacked on the train when he was 18, and so he says it's taken me 10 years to feel comfortable in my skin, and now I can do that because I'm masculine and I go to the gym and I've bulked up and I feel, you know, all of these things. You know, what about all of the young men that can't necessarily do that? What about what about the young men who have continued on and they've continued to be, you know, effeminate, flamboyant, fierce, whatever they're going to be?
Yeah.
And that's the way that they've chosen. I mean, who says it's right or wrong? I think it's that's the more important conversation with me about how we cope with this, and we focus on that being the issue, that he and a whole bunch of other people, you know, can't necessarily be themselves without being harmed in some way, rather than going, well, Russell said this or that. Like, I think that what he's brought up is an important conversation, but if we just focus on him, then I think it's a distraction.
I think one part of what he highlights is as we're talking about the culture of growing up and the capacity of an individual to be themselves. And he said, the bit of the quote before what the bit that's been publicised, he says, "I was so envious of everyone who went to the theatre school. I wanted to go, but my dad flat out refused. He thought I'd become some tap dancing freak without qualifications." Stephen, I think
tap dancing is a qualification, isn't it?
But Stephen, I think that the bit here about I wanted to go to this theatre school, but my dad flat out refused.
That's his dad's homophobia, coming out very clearly there, or his lack of not wanting his son to go into the performing arts, and it is a difficult field to become successful in, and a lot of people don't become successful or don't earn income from it, and he doesn't go into the reasons why his father didn't want him to do that, apart from quite a glib sort of throwaway comment.
Yeah,
And didn't we see this in Billy Elliot?
Yes.
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
But look, I was reflecting on stuff around, he talks a lot about his father, and I think that, like, for me, when I was reading it, it was almost like he was doing an ode to his father. Like, it was some kind of, dad, and, like, thanking him in some way. There was something in there that I was reading, but I thought, well, there's different ways you can read it, because, if I'd followed all the crap that my father had hoped for me when I was growing up, I'd hate to think the man I would have become, to this day. So, it's about how you respond, obviously, in your family environment.
When I was 17, 18, all I wanted to do was go to radio school. And my parents said, no, 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 you're not going to radio school. You're going to get a real qualification. And I'm so glad I did. So I went to uni, but I did PR, so it's pretty gay.
Yeah.
And they couldn't stop you being gay, and they couldn't stop you being on radio.
No, that's right. But now I have qualifications, so it's okay.
And maybe for Russell, because his father said no, it made him a lot more hungry to become successful in his chosen field.
Yeah,
true.
And had he been given the opportunity to go to the dance school and...
he might be still working at a burger joint.
Exactly. He wouldn't have had that sort of hunger or drive that he's probably got by having that withheld from him.
Mm. But is it a case that... do you think parents want their sons to man up?
I think, if I'm going to go in here, I think parents don't want their kids to be at risk of violence. Which might bring us to our next point.
Yeah.
Joy 94.9.
Now, James, just before we go on, I wanted to mention one of our most popular podcasts this year so far is our Nude Men in the studio a couple of weeks ago. Well, Nude Man Fest is having their farewell summer 2015 gathering.
What do they do during winter?
Not much.
Yep, fair enough.
So, if you go to...
Maybe do indoor activities.
Indoor activities, I guess. Nudemanfest.com.au, the 12th to the 16th of March, they're having another gathering. So, check that out. And also go to joy.org.au/hideandseek for that podcast and many more.
Yes, all the podcasts are there.
All the podcasts are there.
Now, in the studio, we have Stephen and Daniel talking about masculinity after our good friend... Toby.
Toby.
I'm going to get it wrong every time now because we talked about whether it was Toby or Toby.
Russell Toby. He's very hot.
Yeah. And he said comments about his youth, that he could have ended up a lot more effeminate
but his
if
father,
it wasn't for his father. Yep. His heavy-handed, opinionated mask father. Yes. I'm assuming I'm going to say mask. It's probably mask. Probably builder or something. Stonemason, maybe. Plumber.
Don't know what they do in Essex.
No. People have gone off the handle.
They have a little bit. So we've got, as we said, Stephen and Daniel in the studio talking all things. What are we calling it? Hashtag mask.
Yeah. But before we went to the break, we raised the question, or we posed the question, why is it that parents would be so worried about their kids becoming so effeminate?
That's right.
And I made the mention that perhaps they don't want their children to be subjected to any violence.
That's part of it.
And Daniel, you nodded your head.
Oh, sure. Look, I think that's definitely would be my parents' experience. I know that my mum was very, very... hers was she didn't want me to lead a life that was going to make me more at risk than my brother and sister. So she said, if you're going to have a life that's not as good as your brother and sister because they're heterosexual, then that's going to make me upset. And, you know, I don't want that to be the case. My dad took a different approach. He wanted me to get involved in all the kind of masculine stuff that you would, whether it was, you know, do you call Cubs and Scouts masculine? I'd probably not. but as well as footy and cricket and all the rest of it. But he also, as a rites of passage, he took me when I was 16, and I know that this was about me being gay. He took me on a shooting trip where we went.
Wait, when did you know you were gay?
I knew I liked guys probably when I was about 11 or 12.
Wow.
So the end of primary school, I knew that it was always going to be something that I wanted to be kind of doing. I just had this belief that everyone told me, I always heard everything that I read was bisexuality is something that's common and you grow out of it. Oh. So I kept on going, I know I like guys, but I'm just waiting one day I'm going to wake up and it's not going to be the case. Okay. And I'm going to like girls too. And I never woke up and liked girls. And then kind of when I hit 16, I just went, oh, I don't think that's going to happen. and I was quite happy about that. But my dad took me on this shooting trip because he wanted to somehow put me in this the most masculine environment he couldn't. You know, I love to ride a bike, I love to shoot a gun, I just don't like killing things. And all, you know, after a while, kind of, you know, with all these men who just drink beer and speak bullshit, I mean, there's only so much you can do before you go, I'm ready this to go home and do something else. So
Stephen, is it also the case that gay men take it up the arse and therefore they're not real men?
I think there's a perception amongst heterosexuals that the act of being sodomized is going to make you less masculine. Mm-hmm. I'd argue the opposite. You know, it actually.
Yeah, if you can take that up there.
You know how to toughen up.
Yep.
So there's probably that aspect of it is a little bit. And so many colloquialisms in Australian society reinforce that sort of stereotype that if you know, taking it up the arse is an effeminate thing. But you know, it's probably not so much the where you take it, it's the fact that it's you're the one being penetrated that is less manly.
And even that thing, if you capitulate in some way, it's, you know, why don't you bend over? You know, as if that's a bad thing. But if you look at it internationally, it becomes, you know, if you look at Latin American cultures, for example, if you're the penetrated one as the man, you suddenly become the effeminate one, and you become the gay one, or the you know, the one that's ostracized.
You don't have the male role.
Whereas if you're the one who's doing the penetration, I'm not sure how much we can say on this this hour.
You can say
if you're the one fucking, like you're the one who seemed to be the macho, and you there's no flies on you. Like there's no, like you get no blowback, where it, so to speak. Whereas, well, hopefully not.
A bit of splashback. Yeah,
you might be doing it rather wrong depending on what you're into. but it means that it all goes on to the person who's penetrated. So it's a lot more defined in other cultures rather than it would be, for example, in Australia, where we kind of do everything kind of half-assed, which is,
And I think that that's within the gay community in Australia. There's less of that sort of definition of, or distinction between sort of masculine and feminine roles in sort of gay sex. But it's the perception of heterosexual people outside of the gay community that have that sort of almost obsession with wondering, well, who's the man in the relationship? Who's the woman in the relationship? And that can be, I guess that's sort of often shows their ignorance.
Yeah. I think that Priscilla has a lot to answer for because when I told my parents, the only thing they were worried about, because the only thing they knew about gay people, was the fact that they'd watch Priscilla, and that's what my life would then turn into. Like, I would be a man in a dress with a lot of drug issues and some child in Alice Springs. Like, that's what they were worried about. I was like, oh, well, okay, I guess we're just going to have to worry about the fact that you will be in a dress now, so we'll just have to get used to that.
I'm like, I know mothers who talk to me all the time who say they wish that their child was gay and wish that they would dress up. So, you know, like, I know that there's different ways you can respond to that. But, you know, with something like Priscilla, as someone who drove around the country going to rural communities and talking to them about these issues, Priscilla can be seen to be both a blessing and a curse. Because whilst you do have some, you know, it might reinforce some people's ideas about what gay is, I know at the same time, many communities said it was the it was like this extravagant excuse for people to have a conversation that they wouldn't have had otherwise.
Yeah.
That and it was, you know, to this day, it's, you know, 21 years ago, the bush will still bring up Priscilla whenever they think of gays in the bush, because it's now this cultural reference point which you wouldn't have otherwise had. So, yeah, I kind of find that it's a bit of a blessing and a curse.
Stephen, I was going to, you know, media portrayals of the gay community, mainstream media portrayals of the gay community do tend to have that effeminate bent to them, I guess. How do you think that provides opportunities for role modelling for younger people?
Well, there's been a few cases more recently, thinking of the local sort of Melbourne media, where the people being portrayed are actually being portrayed as role models. Jason Ball comes to mind, and portrayed in a very positive light. Whereas if you look, go back 10, 15 years ago, it wasn't always the case. And, you know, there'd be a lot, there wasn't as many role models around. And I think you can thank sort of the generations of, sort of above us that have had to actively come out and make that a process and deal with the media, coming out to the media, like sportsmen like Ian Roberts, or whereas the generation now, and sort of Matthew Mitchum comes to mind here, where they are out instead of coming out to the media wasn't actually something, well, staying in the closet with the media wasn't actually something that was ever an option for a lot of younger guys now.
And this, I mean, on Monday, this coming Monday, we'll be opening up the papers and we'll be seeing the photos of the Mardi Gras, and they're all going to be drag queens and
dykes on bikes.
Yep.
And also guys in arseless chaps.
Yep.
As well. But look, this is something I think that's
Stephen,
interesting.
You're going to be on the front cover.
I think I may be wearing something like that.
One of the things that I find interesting in these comments about, you know, when people start talking about what about drag queens and effeminate people and where they've played the role that they've played and how they've been our traditional role models, is that we also need to realise that we now have this situation where someone like Russell can be successful and can bask in this movement and be himself and be masculine and all the rest of it. But why is that? You know, often it's because drag queens and effeminate men have been coming out and being fierce and, you know, and speaking up and being and leading those movements. So I think you know it's one thing to say, well, gee, those stereotypes might be damaging, but for a lot of people, they've found comfort and solace in those, and we have a lot to thank for those people standing up and being incredibly, you know, because if you play with gender in this country, you know, people get pretty upset with you. And the fact that they've been doing it, and they've done it in decades before and not just now in the current environment where, that, you know, it is a lot more relaxed, I think it's still really important to remember that.
Hide and Seek.
James Finlay and Andrew the Apprentice with you for Hide and Seek, your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. In the studio with us, Stephen and Daniel. We're talking about masculinity.
We are. Russell Tovey, of course, kicked off some controversy over the weekend. We should mention, of course, Russell has subsequently issued some tweets.
Yes, he's apologised.
He has apologised.
Which is a weak move.
Yeah, well, yes, I think so. But I think it comes into what our next point is. So Russell did tweet on Monday. I surrender. You got me. I sat baffled and saddened that this misfired, inarticulate quote of mine has branded me the worst gay ever. If you feel I have personally let you down, I'm sorry. That was never my intention. I'm proud to be who I am and proud for others. We're in this together. I want you to know whatever you think I meant, I didn't. So that's his apology he issued on Twitter.
Also pretty badly.
Seemed like a very long tweet.
It was three tweets put together. I
can imagine now that there's going to be a BuzzFeed of the who are the worst gays ever, you know, 21 of them or something.
It'll come.
It will. So a few things there. But one opinion piece that I saw from here in Australia was essentially saying that masculinity is people are buying into it being the gold standard of homosexuality. Is masculinity the gold standard?
I think in dating apps you see it as equal as race, as being something that people reject outright on the basis of.
Yep.
I personally think that's wrong, but that's certainly you'll see, you know, no femmes.
Yeah.
And that's I mean, everybody has masculine and feminine aspects to their own personality. And at the best of times, you can be quite masculine, and at other times, you can be quite feminine, depending on the audience, how comfortable you are with them,
your mood.
And so, I don't think it's right to put that up as the gold standard.
I have fun with guys sometimes when they, if they send a message on the apps and say, "Oh, are you straight acting?" Like, well, I like sucking dick, so it's not very straight if you ask me. You're going to say something
about the sorry, I've just lost my thought.
I just say dick once.
In terms of whether it is the gold standard, I mean, I can tell you, I've lived both here and in Berlin a few times, and the default is that if you are seemingly so masculine and straight acting, that you will get more attention than if you're not. Whether or not that's the right thing, I mean, I agree, with Stephen that you know, when it comes to masculine and feminine, you know, femininity, I'm very versatile with the way in which I do that. But I know that, when I was dating and going out there and being contacted by guys, I had in my profile, and I was quite explicit. If there's any internalized homophobia, I know that they'd probably have to go and Google that. But or sexual racism, then I'm not interested. And I had conniptions at time because I had to reject some really hot guys because they were just douchebags around that. I've got no issue with if you're masculine or not, but there's a way in which you can do that. There's a way in which you that plays itself out, and if you're a douchebag about it, then I'm not interested.
One of the reasons why masculinity could be considered a gold standard is that often guys that are masculine appear to be more comfortable with their own selves, and it's that confidence that becomes more attractive than the masculinity. So it doesn't matter how whether they're full-time blokey bloke and or whether they sort of a bit more on the spectrum, you'll find that if people are confident, and then that's what will be found attractive.
Yeah, and the line I used to use was, I'd rather genuine than straight acting any day. That was always. And I know that it's for some reason people find it shocking when I say this, but if I've got a choice between someone who's straight acting and masculine, or someone who's effeminate and has been clearly living in their own skin and having to thinking about dick their whole life, I know who I want to go to bed with. I'm going to be going for the guy who's been thinking about dick his whole life. I feel that I'm going to have a much better time.
They're going to know what they're doing.
Well, but as opposed to someone who might know, and I've always found that interesting, that people think that one would be less exciting than the other.
Yeah, no one wants some straight acting mask guy who's still not really comfortable with.
Oh, a lot of my friends do.
That's a fetish thing, right?
Those
people
experiences,
are chasing those.
Those experiences tend to be over pretty quickly.
Yeah. They are, and all in the wrong places. Yeah.
And when I was living in Berlin, I actually met. I was in a change room, and there was an Italian model at the time who dropped his towel, and he noticed that I got flustered. And anyway, one thing led to another, and I was back at his place, and he was fascinated. And we could only speak German because he didn't speak any English. I didn't speak any Italian, and he was fascinated because after everything it was over, he told me that he believed that I was straight and had a girlfriend for whatever reason, which I thought was hilarious at first. But he was convinced that that was it. And
that was okay to hook up because you had a girlfriend?
He thought that was okay. But then I thought, so you dropping the towel and me getting flustered in a change room with guys, and you think somehow that I'm straight and I'm not, at least. But yeah, I found that curious.
I wonder if he would have taken you home if he knew that you were raging homosexual.
Well, he looked at me and he just goes, "There's something about there's something about you that's different, And he just wanted to drag me home.
Cock.
And yeah.
So, but as we're saying, there's essentially potentially there's two types of masks. There's one mask that's somebody's very comfortable in their own skin, and there's another type of mask where people are faking it.
Well, even whether or not they're faking it, it's how you do it, because we know that for whatever reason, if you're white, male, you know, educated, more masculine, then you're going to have privilege that a whole bunch of other people don't, and it's how you then wield that privilege.
Yep.
And you know, people hate talking about privilege because they kind of get bored and their eyes glaze over. But it, basically, if you're a douchebag because you have all of these things that people want, then I've got a problem with that. But if you're just naturally, as I said, naturally masculine, I've got no issue. You can just be comfortable in your own skin. And I think those guys that are, like, you're right, Stephen, those guys that are comfortable in their own skin, they don't have to kind of wield it about, or they don't have to do commentary on someone's, you know, faggy or sissy or girly or whatever they kind of want to do. And they can just go, look, I'm comfortable with whoever, just as long as you kind of, you know, don't get in my face.
Daniel, you've also done work in the family violence, domestic violence.
Sure.
Area.
Family violence and homophobia go together.
Yeah, and that's where I was going with. The traditional concept of hegemonic masculinity, for those who know that term at home, they're very much intertwined, aren't they?
Sure. So, and you can even take it further. I mean, I worked for many years working with the Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission of Victoria, and, you know, it goes without saying that most of the time, if someone's sexist, they're also racist and they're homophobic as well. These things tend to go together. But certainly, there's this whole thing that you know, when you look at what happens with male family violence, you know, men's violence against women, it tends to be around, they have issues around entitlement, power, and control. So, you know, like, I deserve to, I'm the man, you should do this, my needs are more important than yours. I mean, that plays itself out in a whole bunch of ways. It doesn't necessarily have to be physical violence, it can be emotional, financial, whatever that's going to be. But certainly those things go together. And when an organization I've worked with in the past, they run men's behavioral change programs. And one of the things they do is they explore men's ideas of traditional views of masculinity. And often it is, I want to prove that I'm a man's man and I don't want people to think I'm gay. So there's certain ways in which I'll do things. And one of the things that I've been interested in is I don't think they explore enough about how this fear of being gay actually plays itself out in terms of the way in which men do the power and control thing with women. Mm-hmm. And feel that they have to be hyper-masculinated in order to somehow live their life and cope with stress in everyday life.
Because what I'm getting to, I'm guessing, is as we're almost wrapping up, is that a lot of our discussion tonight has really focused around homophobia or perceptions of homophobia, haven't they? So if we can reduce homophobia and continue to reduce it across society, then don't we have the opportunity to decrease the differences between femme and mask, for example, within the gay community?
Well, it gets back to a point earlier. I think then if people are effeminate, they're less likely to experience violence towards them and homophobia from outside the gay community.
Yeah, and again, my thing is that the less homophobia there is, and the more comfortable we get with the whole idea of gender, the less we're going to be, you know, crapped off by the fact that someone might be effeminate and somehow we have to get up in their face and hurt them for it. Like, I keep coming back to, I think that's the issue, is that, you know, as people get more comfortable in their own skin, they don't have to get worried about how other people are living in their own. And I think that we've, as a community, and that this goes across LGBTI, all of it, is that people, you know, have a view about the way in which we should or shouldn't be living our lives, and that's what we have, you know, all have in common, even though we're incredibly diverse and different.
And without homophobia, potentially Russell Tovey's father would have let him go on to the theatre school, and he could have turned out completely different, or he could have gone down exactly the same path just because he wanted to.
I don't think the father's behaviour is probably going to be the sole factor influencing direction his career took.
And again, he kept on talking about how that's provided him with an opportunity to be in a moment in time where everybody seems to want him in, you know, acting in their projects and all the rest of it. And that was certainly what he was talking about, rather than, and certainly I don't think that there was any, if you talk about internalized homophobia, and again, you know, people get bored by that, but, you know, instead of this self-hatred or self-pitying, it was more he just seemed to be distancing himself from it, just kind of going, this is kind of where I am, I'm not over there. And I think that's probably what people are picking up on. And, you know, let's face it, if you're, you know, an effeminate gay man, you've been putting up with those kinds of comments, you know, your whole life. So we can understand that perhaps, you know, some big hot guy with, you know, kind of interesting ears is, you know, saying something like that is going to get people riled up. It might be the straw that broke the camel's back. Rather than it being about Russell, it might be about a whole bunch of other stuff as well. So, you know, I just think if you're out there, you know, mask, if you know, effeminate, whatever, just we should all be giving each other bear hugs and encouraging each other to be themselves.
And on that note,
I think on that note, time to wrap things up.
Guys, thank you so much for coming in tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen. Thank you to Daniel. And we'll be back to wrap things up right off this, James. You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9.
You can subscribe to Hide and Seek's podcast for free. Visit joy.org.au/hideandseek for more information. Suggest a topic, a guest, or provide feedback. Email hideandseek@joy.org.au. Hide and Seek is presented by Andrew the Apprentice, James Findlay and Avi Miller. Post-production by David Cheshire.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.